10. So I think we have some critical mass, and we'll get started. I wanted to welcome everyone who's joined us so far. My name is Matt Baker. I'm the Science Director with the North Pacific Research Board, and with me is Zenbi Lloyd, the Executive Director, and Danielle Dixon, the Senior Program Manager, who will be affiliated with the Arctic Program. So similar to the announcements that's made on flights as you're boarding, this is an informational teleconference for the Arctic Program, so if that's not what you're intending to join, feel free to step out or use your time elsewhere. But I really wanted to thank folks for participating. It sounds from the beeps that we have quite a lot of folks on the line. I think there's a lot of interest here. And so the announcement for this program had been sent out to a general contact list of just about 10,000 people. These are folks that are affiliated with NPRB, either as peer reviewers, as previous or current applicants associated with the program. And we also sent this out to a distribution list of about 400 contacts that were associated with Arctic research institutions or listservs, state and federal agencies, universities, nonprofits, foundations, industry groups, and the like. So please feel free to distribute the announcement and the RFP and information about the program to other colleagues that you have that might be interested in serving as an applicant or a collaborator, or just general interest in the Arctic or with NPRB. I think if I can have most use their phones, I think that will help with everyone with the clarity of the call. And we're also recording the call and may post this online so folks know that this is being recorded. A reminder again to mute your phone if you're on the call. So I'm not sure how many people are on this call, and normally we would go around and ask participants to introduce themselves and potentially their interest in the program, but given the numbers that are on this call and the time that it would take to work through all those introductions and also difficulty in coordinating the sequencing of that so that we don't have people talking on top of each other, we're going to hold off on the introductions. But we do ask that you send information about yourself to Danielle. The email is danielle.dixon, D-I-C-K-S-O-N, @nprb.org. And we're asking that you send your name, your affiliation, contact information, and your area of expertise or interest. And the idea behind this is that it will help. We would be posting this and distributing this list of participants as a preliminary look at who's interested in the program. And there's a few reasons for that. One is to help coordinate collaboration and start the process of establishing partnerships and collaborative teams. We also want to identify as many of the potential applicants as possible. It's again, the first step towards building some integrated programs and teams. And then it's also an opportunity for you to get a sense of who might be involved and how you might link your research to other initiatives that are happening or other researchers that are getting engaged in the program. And I think that's going to be a key element to having an effective proposal and ultimately an effective program that we put together. So I just wanted to provide an overview for the call. That's sort of the introduction. I was going to provide an overview of the program, then turn it over to Danielle, who's going to talk a little bit more about the history and the context and the rationale behind the development of this program, as well as going through a list of partnerships. We have a fairly extensive list of collaborating institutions and programs, and we wanted to make sure that you're aware of those. Those are all listed in the appendix of the RFP. Then I'll pick it up again, just walk very briefly through the overview of the RFP questions, a little bit about the timeline and the process for application. And then we really just wanted to open it up to all of you to ask questions about the process, about what we're looking for, about how the program might come together. So at that point, it's really just a free-for-all to hopefully answer some of the questions that you might have. So in terms of the program itself, this is the third integrated ecosystem research program that MPRB has launched. We've developed those, one in the Bering Sea previously, as well as in the Gulf of Alaska. And these have been somewhat of a flagship approach to marine science. It's a really unique opportunity to integrate across disciplines and advance a better understanding of how a whole system or ecosystem or certain elements of it at least function. And so the elements of this that we're looking to replicate in an Arctic program is to identify some of the critical processes that structure systems and interactions both between the physics and the biology and among species and across trophic levels. The approach is to gain more of a mechanistic understanding of some of the key elements that are structuring and allowing those systems to function in the way that they're functioning now. So we're interested in looking at things that influence phenology, distribution, persistence, abundance of species in these systems. And then what are the implications for industries as well as communities that are relying on those? It's also a great opportunity to develop new partnerships and foster new approaches to science. This includes the development of new methodologies as you're pulling together suites of researchers within a field. It also allows people to build linkages across fields and link empirical data collection with laboratory analyses and model analyses, I think, in a pretty unique way. And we found that those partnerships that are developed in these programs often extend far beyond the context of the program itself. And so that's a legacy that we're hoping to replicate with this program. So we're looking to build on some of the successes with the Bering Sea and the Gulf of Alaska project and also the lessons learned and looking forward to insights that we gain through this call and as we move the program forward. This is also a collaborative project in the sense of not only the PIs who will be involved, but also the funding institutions and different programs that are engaged in helping to structure and support it. So this is a partnership between the North Pacific Research Board, but also the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management and the North Slope Borough Shell Baseline Studies Program. Both of those institutions programs have put together $1 million to contribute to the overall program that that we're launching here. And so we greatly appreciate not only that financial contribution, but also the insights they've had in helping to structure and think about how we put this program together. We've also received guidance from the Interagency Arctic Research Policy Committee, or IARPIC, which is a intergovernmental agency looking at coordinating Arctic research across federal agencies, and as well as the U.S. Arctic Research Commission. So we appreciate their guidance as well. And then finally, we have explicit collaboration with a suite of partnerships, including programs that are funded by the National Science Foundation, a suite of different NOAA initiatives and programs, programs run by the U.S. Geological Society, those funded by the Office of Naval Research, as well as ongoing university programs and research that's supported and publicized through the Alaska Ocean Observing System. So the focus of this program overall is the Arctic. And just to give you a general idea about the geography of this, we're talking largely about the Northern Bering Sea, the Bering Straits and the Chukchi Sea, focused on the Chukchi Sea. But we're encouraging collaborations that would go across the whole expanse of the Chukchi Sea and also looking for science that might help fuel some comparisons with other regional or marginal seas around the Arctic. We're overall looking to try and understand what are some of the important processes and patterns and linkages in the system, particularly physics and biology, and then what are those implications for resource management, for subsistence use, for human impacts on the system, and how might that system change or those impacts change in the near future, sort of on a 50-year time scale. The timing for this program was sort of predicated in part because the U.S. is assuming more of a role in Arctic research. They're assuming the chair of the Arctic Council, but also there's a lot of research going on in the Arctic right now. Things are opening up and the system's changing in a lot of different ways, and MPRB is hoping to help provide a coordinating role to some extent with some of the research that's going on there. That said, research in this system is expensive. It's remote. It's a remote system. It's a difficult system to work in. And so there's some high costs, and what we'll get to later, and I think some of the questions that people might have is how to leverage those resources, including research platforms and so on, to really get the most bang for our buck and support as much research as we can, given the logistics required to support that research up there. So while most of the a lot of the development of the program and the identification of some of the research questions has happened over the last year, this program's been in the works or has been planned over a longer time period. And so I thought at this stage I would turn it over to Danielle, and she'll provide a little bit of the history and the context for the program, and then again go through some of the partnerships that we have engaged.
Hey, thanks, Matt. So I'm Danielle Dixon. I joined MPRB 4 years ago to manage our Gulf of Alaska Integrated Ecosystem Research Program and to work on developing the Arctic program that we're talking about today. And it will be my pleasure to serve as a program manager for this Arctic program over the next several years. So we've been working towards this Arctic program for some time, and as Matt said, I'd just like to provide a little bit of history for you for how we got here. So MPRB recognized years ago that in light of recent changes in sea ice and the need for updated information about the Arctic marine ecosystem, given economic interests in the Alaska offshore environment, that we could really contribute to taking what we've learned from our integrated ecosystem research programs in the Gulf of Alaska and the Bering Sea and apply that to the Arctic. And we also recognized that several other groups like BOEM and industry were already funding quite a bit of research in the region, and we wanted to coordinate with and, most importantly, not duplicate all of that work. So MPRB allocated $6 million to an Arctic program, and we realized that we really needed to cooperate with other funding agencies to achieve an ecosystem-level research program, given the costs associated with working up there. And at about the same time that MPRB was beginning to discuss partnership with other agencies, the Interagency Arctic Research Policy Committee, IARPIC, produced their 5-year plan for U.S. Arctic research, and the administration emphasized interagency partnership to address national priorities. So MPRB worked closely with the IARPIC Chukchi and Beaufort Sea Ecosystem Collaboration Team that's facilitating interagency cooperation and working towards implementing aspects of the IARPIC 5-year plan related to ecosystem information needs offshore. And that group organized a workshop at the White House in spring of 2013 to begin developing a conceptual model of the Arctic marine ecosystem. And the workshop report is available on our website. We have a resources for investigators page on our Arctic website, and that report is there. And one of the main ideas that resulted from that workshop was a consensus that a rapid recent changes in sea ice and advection of water northward through Bering Strait are the primary drivers that are influencing the ecosystem, and that future research should be conducted in the context of those drivers. So NPRB was interested in using the Integrated Ecosystem Research Program approach to examine how those physical drivers are structuring biological communities from plankton to fish, marine mammals and seabirds, and the humans who depend on marine resources and ecosystem services. But before beginning such a program, NPRB also saw value in a synthesis of previously conducted Arctic marine research, and Shell and ConocoPhillips were interested in providing funds for such a synthesis, and they approached NPRB and NSF about administering it. So NPRB and NSF cooperated over the last few years to issue a solicitation, provide funds, and serve as program managers for the Pacific Marine Arctic Regional Synthesis, or PACMARS. And PACMARS was coordinated with a separate synthesis, the Synthesis of Arctic Research, or SOAR, that was funded by BOEM. And PACMARS was completed in early 2015, and the report and an extensive data archive developed by that project are available on the website on that same Resources for Investigators page. And the report includes recommendations for the direction of future research, and we encourage proposers to refer to that as you develop proposals. And while the synthesis was occurring, NPRB approached several agencies and organizations about partnership on this new Arctic ecosystem research program. And over the last couple of years, we've met with several agencies, including BOEM, NOAA, several offices within NOAA, in fact, USGS, Office of Naval Research, National Science Foundation, and others. And we've met with many of them at both the national and regional levels. We've spoken with the U.S. Marine Mammal Commission, Alaska Native Marine Mammal Co-Management Organizations, especially those in the North Slope and Northwest Arctic regions of Alaska. We've met with local Alaska government representatives in both the North Slope and Northwest Arctic boroughs. And we've spoken with private sector and non-governmental organizations, including the environmental science leads of Shell and ConocoPhillips, Rasmussen Foundation, National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, and others. And we've also, coordinating bodies like IARPIC and the U.S. Arctic Research Commission have been really instrumental in facilitating some of these conversations, and we really appreciate all of their support over the last few years. So several groups have expressed interest in partnership. However, some of them have not don't have access to mechanisms that would allow them to issue funds through our process. However, BOEM and the North Slope Borough Shell Baseline Studies Program have each contributed $1 million to this call for proposals, and so those funds will go out through this call. Other agencies, including NOAA, USGS, ONR, NSF, and others, have contributed ongoing projects that they have funded separately to this coordinated program. And information about 20 such projects can be found in Appendix A in the RFP. And NPRB has been very pleased with the enthusiasm expressed by collaborating organizations, and we really look forward to learning about other projects that might like to cooperate as well. Proposers are encouraged to look at the projects in Appendix A as proposals are developed, to look at the information that those projects are providing, and to think about how that work can be leveraged to better achieve understanding of the ecosystem as a whole. So that's the context that I wanted to give you. I think Matt's going to go into a little bit more detail about the contents of the RFP, and then we'll get to answering your questions.
Yeah, so this is a thanks, Danielle. This is a two-stage process for proposal submission and review. And so what you're seeing right now with the RFP is a request for pre-proposals, and those would be due at the end of July, so July 31st. Then, after a review of that, we would look for an invitation to submit full proposals that would be made in October, and right now we have a deadline for that of January 15th, 2016. So we're encouraging both, we've received a few questions, and I'll try and hit on those a little bit in this. We would encourage both multidisciplinary programs that are addressing different parts of the marine environment, but also discrete projects that might integrate into a larger program. But what we're asking for all of the proposers to do is to explicitly detail how what you're looking to do would integrate into a broader program overall. And so that would be in this pre-proposal phase. For those proposals or those groups that are invited back to submit a full proposal, we'll make the list of those available so folks know who's been asked back and the types of research that's going on and ways that those might link together. So in terms of the RFP itself, there's approximately $8 million available at this stage. We've set aside some of those monies for program management, data management, and communications and outreach. But the overall research question that we're getting at is essentially, it's two parts to it, which is, how do the physical, biological, and ecological processes in the Chukchi Sea influence the distribution, the life history, and the interactions of species or groups of species, species guilds, that are critical to either how the system functions or to subsistence use? That's the first and the main question, and the second is related, which is how might those processes or that system change in the near future, meaning the next 50 years. And so as Danielle mentioned, the role of sea ice, the role of advection, this is our important processes, as well as some of the linkages between the pelagic and the benthic system, and the linkages between both the physics and the biology. So we're interested a lot, I think, in this system with the alignment in time and space, so the phenology of primary production and what that means for secondary production, and then upper trophic level linkages. So those are some of the main themes. We identify a suite of different research categories. Normally in the NPRB RFPs, there are specific areas underneath those categories that proposals are asked to identify with. We're being a little bit more general with this, and so we have essentially five main areas. And we have target funding indicated, but again, that target funding, the funding in each category might change depending on the types of proposals that we see come through and how they're structured, whether or not you have some large collaborations or more smaller collaborations that we would look to link together. One of the questions is, what are some of the patterns in subsistence use and potential shifts in response to ecosystem change? There's several bullets under that. Those are all suggestions about types of research that would fit under that. They're not prescriptive, and this is true of all the categories. They're not prescriptive, nor are they inclusive of all the type of research that we might fund. Is it, you know, proposers should feel comfortable addressing one or more of the areas underneath each of these. The second category is looking at species distributions and interactions. So how do the physical and ecological drivers influence distribution interactions? Are there important tipping points relevant to the distribution and life history of apex predators or species that are of importance to subsistence, or species and guilds, again, groups of species that would be critical to how the system is structured right now, how energy flows through the system, and how that system's functioning. The third area is looking at oceanography and lower trophic level productivity. So this would be the influence of sea ice dynamics and advection as key processes influencing phenology, the magnitude and the timing and spacing or location of primary and secondary production, whether or not you have match-mismatch dynamics, how energy is either retained in the pelagic environment or settling out into the benthic system, and what are some of those implications, and potentially the influence of winter conditions. This is something where there's some interest in understanding how the system functions in the winter, but there's a lot of cost to doing that, and so I think that might be something that we look to fund if it's an element that can be brought in a cost-effective way, or if there's a lot of interest in really in that particular element. That's something that you know, we'll get a better sense of after we see what folks are looking to put proposals into. And then finally, we have a modeling section. And so we're looking specifically to have an ice atmosphere oceanography model, maybe also looking at some of the other physical processes such as wave dynamics and influence in the system. But we're also interested in other types of models, so network modeling to understand important nodes or linkages in the ecology of the system, looking at nutrient phytoplankton zooplankton models, and particularly links to sea ice algae, multi-species models, and a variety of other types of modeling efforts. We also wanted to make the point that while this is an independent category, modeling could be integrated into any of the elements previously listed. And so, again, depending on how these proposals come together, we may look to move funding amounts around a little bit. And then finally, there's a fifth area. This is something that we include in all the RFPs, which is other research. And this is in recognition that what we've outlined here is not inclusive of all the research needs or good research ideas out there, and so we want to ensure that there's a space for people to submit ideas that are not specifically articulated here. In terms of the process and the elements of the pre-proposal that should come through, there's essentially five different elements, and those would be combined and then emailed to the email that's on the front page of the RFP. This is the research plan, which is the one element that has a space limit on it. So that would be a five-page research plan template looking at identifying the title, the research category that it's applying the proposals under, a rationale and justification, some of the preliminary hypotheses, the objectives, expected outcomes, and project design and conceptual approach. The hypotheses for the program overall will be something that's worked out in the first PI meeting. So really we're looking at what are the hypotheses for your specific research, but the hypotheses for how the system is functioning overall and some of the larger questions that the program will try and address will be something that's worked out once we've identified those proposals that are accepted and those PIs are brought together along with collaborators from the different programs that we've identified as explicitly looking to share data and to associate a PI with this program. So that would be something that happens a little down the road. We also have a timeline and milestones template, a budget and a budget narrative, and then finally a logistics survey or summary. And this is really looking at what are the sort of research needs and some of the expenses that you're anticipating in terms of vessel type, capabilities, ship time, flights, any sort of large research platform. And the idea here is that we'd like to have this separated from the budget that folks put together so that we can distinguish, you know, what is a large cost associated with doing the research versus some of the more discrete elements and costs related to the research. And that will help figure out how to, what are some of the trade-offs in different proposals and what might work together using some common platforms for research. So I think that's all we have at this stage. Hopefully that's provided a little bit of an overview, and we'd be happy to take questions from anyone.
And when you ask a question, if you would please start by identifying yourself with your name and affiliation, we'd appreciate it.
Hi there, Danielle and Matt and Denby. This is Seth Danielson and Russ Hopcroft up in Fairbanks here. And we had one question about this logistics issue that you just brought up. The implication was that we don't actually include the logistics cost within our budget, but it seems like the whole $8 million is already allocated under the RFP. Am I reading that right?
So what we'll do, Seth, is we'll look at the suite of pre-proposals that come in, and the money to support the logistic platforms will have to be found within that $8 million, but what we'll be able to do is look at the pre-proposals that come in and how we could best achieve an ecosystem-level program that's also reasonable within the budget constraints and invite full proposals. And so we will have to find the money for the logistics within the $8 million. And so depending on how the program is set up, that will determine how many discrete projects we can also fund.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Yeah, within your budgets, you'll just need to let us, you don't need to include the vessel support or the aerial support in your budget, but you will have to explain what you would require in that logistics summary.
So this is Phyllis and the rest of the Seattle group. So what you're saying is that you would just put in, we would need a class one ship or we would need a fishing boat or whatever to do this work. Do you give an estimate of how much you think it's going to cost per day, or you just say what you need?
Yeah, there's a whole form or template that's a logistics summary, and what we're asking there is really a fairly detailed outlook of what are the elements, what are the logistical needs, so what are the specifics related to the type of ship that you would need, what number of days would you need it for, what sort of timing, what are the costs associated or estimated for doing you know, that type of ship time, you know, whether or not you could be doing it in total darkness, so a variety of different questions along those lines. And then we're also asking for you to identify leverage of in-kind support or logistics. So if there's ongoing, if there's NOAA or PEML vessels in operation that you might use as that platform, are those the types of resources that you could bring to the program as well? And so because we're trying to coordinate something across a wide group of folks and institutions, and we will try and coordinate those large costs as much as possible. I think this will give us a better sense of what are the costs associated in terms of gear, equipment, personnel, all the stuff that's typically related to a proposal, but not the really large costs related to research platforms. But because of this logistics summary, we'll have an idea about what those costs might be for a specific program because of the number of days and the type of vessel and so on that you might need.
Okay.
Yeah, so just reiterating, I'd really encourage folks before you get too far down the line with developing proposals to look at what's requested in that template, the Arctic Program Logistics Summary template, and you'll see there some more detailed information about what we're looking for, and you might get a sense of how we might think about structuring it. And I'll mention, too, just to add to my answer to Seth's question, that, you know, assuming that things stay status quo over the next several months, that we will need to find support for logistics within that $8 million. However, we also will be exploring some other potential opportunities over the next few months with other organizations that, that may be able to provide some of that ship time as well.
Hello? Matt, this is hello, Matt. This is Lorenzo from Cianelli from OSU.
Hey.
I have a question. In the case a group of PIs want to develop a multidisciplinary coordinated proposal, pre-proposal, would we each of the co-PIs need to develop, you know, a template for one of these proposals, or should there be one unique pre-proposal, you know, addressing all the various facets that are in the multidisciplinary proposal?
To some extent, that's a strategic question, I think. If you feel like you have a team that's very integrated as well, that already that has elements that flow really well together, that might be something that you want to put together as one cohesive unit, and you would, you know, for different institutions, you would break out the budget according to different institutions like you would through the normal annual request for proposals. If there are certain elements that are more tangentially linked, and you know, you felt that it would be better to advance them as individual proposals, there's room for doing that as well. So to some extent, that's a bit of a strategic question as to how to best advance that. So we're trying to leave the space open for both of those options, given that you may have some smaller groups that have a, you know, very discrete small component of something that they've identified how it would link into a larger program, but they're submitting that separately, as well as you're suggesting, a really multidisciplinary, multi-institutional program that's very closely linked and put together as a package. So both are options.
And this is Danielle. I'll just add that we do require you to identify which of the five funding categories you're submitting your proposal underneath. And so I could see a scenario where you may have one aspect of a coordinated team that's looking at work that would fit well under Category 2 and another aspect that would fit under Category 3. And so what I would suggest in that case is that you split your proposals into two big proposals and have them reference each other. So you'd have one proposal under Category 2, another under Category 3, and you'd explicitly state in your proposal that you've worked with this other team that has submitted proposal XYZ under the other category, and make it clear to us that you have done some work to coordinate and that the proposals are linked. However, I would recommend that you make sure that any proposal you submit can be funded as a standalone proposal and doesn't rely entirely on the other proposal in the other category, because there's a chance that one may be funded and the other not. So you'd want to be able to make linkages to any work that would be funded in another category.
All right, thanks.
Daniel, this is Igor Krupnik from the Smithsonian. I have two questions. One is this table on page 4 and page 5 that identifies target funding in different research categories.
Yes.
My question is, for example, the first one, in subsistence use and potential shifts, target funding is 500,000. Is this the pool for this, or this is like one proposal can be in that amount? Or what is the math under this number?
Okay.
And my second question is the timing for the proposals is set like roughly 4 or 5 years. Can there be proposals that ask for 2 or 3 years of funding?
Okay. So in answer to your first question, that we have the target funding amounts for each category, and the RFP states that NPRB intends to fund 1 to 5 proposals under each category. And so you could theoretically submit a proposal up to $500,000, recognizing that if NPRB decides that they'd like to fund more than one in that category, then that would be impossible. But you can submit one proposal for up to the target funding amount, and the board may decide to shift funding between categories and ultimately when making their decisions. In answer to your second question about timing, you can propose work that the bulk of it would happen during a shorter window of time. However, we have asked in the pre-proposal that at least the principal investigators' budget time to participate for, I believe it was 5 years at least, because what we want to do is make sure that to achieve that integrated ecosystem research program objective, we really need all partners engaged throughout. And so we want the field work to integrate well with the other lab and retrospective analyses. And so we want all the main players to stay engaged throughout at least the first 5 or 6 years of the program. And so even though the bulk of your field work may be completed in 1 year, we do want those principal investigators to stay engaged and have some time for their salary to support things like writing up integrated papers for peer-reviewed manuscripts and such in out years.
So essentially this program would be going through 2021, and like Danielle said, you know, if you were looking at something that had a little more of a 2 to 3 year element, we would just ask that folks balance in or budget in their time for participation all the way through, and that their data and would continue to be pulled and used to inform the overall program throughout that time period. We're looking at doing probably separate synthesis at the end of this program overall. That would be something that we would come back to and revisit once the program's up and running. We found that that's an effective way to leverage the data that's found, some new or opportunistic data that's developed in the program, and to take some of these synthesis and these teams one step further. That could include, would likely include some of the folks that are funded through the main part of the program, but it might also include other researchers. So there'd be an opportunity to get engaged again later, likely.
This is Kathy Crane from NOAA. I'm just trying to catch up on the latest instructions from NPRB. Is it about who can apply for awards? Are these awards also available to non-American citizens or, you know, Russian scientists, for example?
Yes, definitely, and that's something that we're really hoping to actively engage with Russian scientists, and we've pursued that with the help of NOAA and some other ongoing collaborations such as Rusalka to try and ensure that to the extent possible we can pull in some science happening in the western side of the Czech GC in Russian waters. So we are definitely encouraging international participants to collaborate with the program, and particularly because the Czech GC is really one system that's split between two different nations. We're looking to foster some strong connections on the Russian side of things.
So is it okay if I forward the announcement to particular Russian scientists who would benefit greatly from this and are ongoing Rusalka scientists?
Absolutely. Please do. We talked with Oleg Kutugin and Ivan Melnikov and a few others at TINRO So there are some folks who are aware of it, but please send it on.
Okay,
it'd be great.
I'll do that.
And similarly, you know, if you would all forward this to your colleagues in the Pacific Arctic group from other nations that have been active in participating in the Distributed Biological Observatory, and others potentially from that are active in the Barents Sea who might be interested in doing some research in the U.S. Arctic for comparisons, we'd appreciate it.
Oh, hello, this is Diana Varela from the University of Victoria in Canada. So speaking of international collaboration, I think it's time for me to talk now. I'm wondering about the regional coverage of this study. You did say North Bering and Chachki, but then you mentioned something about other marginal seas. How far away from those regions can one propose to work comparing with the Chachki or Bering? Basically, what is the you know, how extensive is that coverage that we could use in the proposals?
In terms of directed field research, I think we're really looking at sort of 60 degrees north in the Bering up through the Chukchi Sea and potentially into the basin. So the northern part of the Bering Sea, the straits, the full extent of the Chukchi shelf and potentially the slope and some of the basin dynamics. We're looking at, for proposals that can draw linkages to research that are happening in the Beaufort Sea or in some of the other marginal seas around Siberia or over in the Barents Sea and some of the European initiatives that the Danes and the Norwegians are collaborating on. We'd like to make those connections. We'd like to encourage comparisons, but in terms of directed field research and the focus of proposals, they should remain within that geographic extent of those three areas, the Straits, the Chukchi Shelf, and potentially Slope and Basin, and then the Northern Bering.
Okay, thank you.
This is Jim Turnside from NOAA. Just to clarify, those target funding amounts are total, not annual, correct?
Those are total, and they're preliminary targets. They're not necessarily going to be total limits.
Thanks.
Hey, Matt, this is Francis from Stantec.
Hey, Francis.
Do you have a preset notion of how many pre-proposals you're thinking of inviting back or not yet, just in terms of process?
We don't. I think what we're trying to do is be expansive in this first round to get a better idea of the types of research that's out there and what elements might come together well to develop a whole overall program. But I think without knowing, you know, the quality and extent and number and the types of pre-proposals that we come in, we won't have a good sense of that at this stage.
Okay. And then second question is, there's quite a bit of talk in the documents provided about the participation of collaborators, obviously, to make this happen at PI meetings, at monthly calls, you know, like lead investigators from some of these other projects. Are you anticipating that the programs by which these people already funded are going to contribute extra funds to cover that time, or is NPRB going to supplement some of those people for their time to participate in those calls and meetings?
It depends. We may look to supplement in some cases. Several of these programs have already, especially some of the BOEM programs, have already committed their not only their PIs to attend and participate, but some of the costs related to that participation. So that will be done a little bit on an individual basis, but all of the groups that are and programs that are referenced in Appendix A have agreed to share data and to have PIs attend both logistical meetings that we'll look to have in the beginning of each field season to coordinate resources, as well as the PI annual PI meetings to pull together some of the research.
Okay, thanks.
And this is Danielle. I just wanted to add something based on Francis' first question about the number of pre-proposals we expect to invite back for with full proposals. I just wanted to make it clear that through our process, the proposals that are invited to submit full proposals, those full proposals will still compete in the second round. So just because you've been invited to submit a full proposal doesn't necessarily mean that as long as we think it's great work, it's going forward. We do expect to invite more full proposals than we can ultimately fund. So this second round will still be competitive.
Danielle, if I can have a follow-up question.
Yes.
So having some insight into how the board works, do you believe that, or has there been a discussion that in the invitation of pre-proposals as one of the mechanisms might be suggestions of pre-proposals to combine in order to create full proposals, or are you going to keep them separate at that stage?
I don't think that the board will get into recommending to proposers that they combine their proposals. And so I think it'll be up to the investigators who are invited to submit full proposals to state in their full proposals how they envision that their project could link with some of the other proposals that they may be aware of.
But you believe that they may be open at that stage, like it would be okay process-wise to say several are selected for pre-proposals and then since you said you're going to publish them all, that they contact each other and say, hey, maybe we can join, and so you would not get the same number of full proposals you invited because some of them may get combined. Would that be okay?
I think that might be a possibility. We will be letting everyone know who's invited back to the second round to submit full proposals about the full suite of people who are brought back. Who are invited back and those teams. I think if you have some of those teams look to integrate and stay within the purview of essentially what they put in as individual proposals, that would probably be something that could happen.
Yeah, I think when we invite full proposals, we'll be a little bit more explicit in our instructions to those we invite back about what the bounds are in terms of what we expect from the full proposal.
Okay, thank you.
This is Rebecca Woodgate from University of Washington. So I had a related question, but looking slightly the other way. I can imagine you're going to get quite a lot of semi-overlapping proposals. So I'm wondering if the board will be kind of picking components of pre-proposals to invite back into full proposals.
No, I don't believe that they will do that. I think a given proposal will either be funded 100% or not funded at all. And so in looking at the suite of proposals that come in, our panels and board will have to look at, what are the best each proposal and how could they best come together to form an integrated program. But my guess would be that they will not partially fund proposals, that they'll either take it as a complete package or not fund it at all.
I mean, and at the pre-proposal stage, the same thing?
I'd imagine so. I'd imagine that the full proposal. At the pre-proposal stage, they would either invite something back or not invite someone back.
This is a little bit of a new ground in terms of doing a two-stage process. In the past, the boards decided they had debated funding certain elements of proposals, and they found that actually didn't work out very well because you have a team and you're telling certain people that they're not funded versus others within that project that they are. Because it's a different approach, there may be a little bit of deviation from that, but that's going to be the board's decision to make.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. This is Russ Hopcroft, but just wanted to clarify, though, that it's not a question of proposing some exciting science. It's a question of proposing some exciting science that fits within the program goals, correct?
Yes and no. I think there's still plenty of room for exciting ideas, especially given that we have that other funding category, Category 5. I don't think that proposers should necessarily shy away from proposing something that's cool, exciting science, you know, if you don't think it necessarily fits within the scope. I think the scope is pretty broad, and I think there's room for quite a lot of creativity in there. So I would, you know, the pre-proposal stage is really meant to allow folks to tell the board about your exciting ideas, and then, you know, at the stage that they invite full proposals, they can let you know if they think this might be a great idea, but it's not likely to integrate well with the suite of other work that is likely to come in under this program.
Hi, this is Sean Noren from University of California, Santa Cruz. And I'm a physiological ecologist that looks at marine mammals, and so my work is really more in lab captive animal work, and that's been hit or miss with funding with North Pacific Research Board, although it could answer some of these questions, particularly how sensitive and resilient species are to variability in physical environments, because you can look at how species are affected by caloric intake in a laboratory setting. So I'm wondering, given the hit or miss with North Pacific Research Board, where are you guys thinking as far as answering that type of question and considering questions that are not actually in the environment but, you know, in laboratory-type settings?
Hi, Sean. I think there's certainly room for work like this and various suites of other lab-based work within this program. I think it depends a little bit how the research question that you're proposing to address would integrate with the broader goals of the program. And so, for example, if the program is going to develop a network model and the data that you're providing would help to parameterize that model, I think it could certainly fit in. So it just depends a little bit on the scope of the other work that's being conducted and whether you can make connections with folks from other aspects of the ecosystem to illustrate how your work would fit with the broader question.
Mm-hmm. And that'd be we're doing that with the walruses with USGS, their broader ecosystem base, and so I think that there's room for other data from other species to kind of start fitting into that kind of framework. So I guess my question is, if a proposal was not successful with North Pacific Research Board, you know, is obviously you can take comments back and change it. Is it worthwhile to submit a similar proposal? I can things can also be scaled down. So to someone's point about funding a part of a project versus another project, for some of these condition type analyses, if you're trying to capture the whole reproductive event of a female, that's several years and more costly versus just doing a year in the life of, you know, say non-reproductive females, which doesn't really answer your question. So I'm thinking about the cost in the 5 years. In that case, could you propose, like, here's one way of looking at it or here's the other, you know, and then you guys can decide, okay, yes, we're going to put $100,000 to this project or, you know, $400,000 depending on the length. Is there room for that in this short versus long proposal process?
I think there might be. I guess what I would suggest doing in your case is trying to get a sense for, you know, I mean, you're already working with USGS and they are a collaborator on this program overall. So I think, you know, making some of the linkages to groups that are already actively engaged, but also looking at, you know, who might be actually involved in this specific program and how might that research inform, or as Daniel was suggesting, you know, if there's some modeling efforts, if there's elements looking at distribution or movement patterns, how does your data parameterize or inform those types of analyses? I think you'd want to have some real strong linkages to anything that's not focused specifically up in the region. But yeah, there might be, I think it'd probably be worth putting something in the pre-proposal about how an effort like that could be scaled back to a lower cost.
Okay. And yeah, I'm not thinking walruses, but belugas, so not USGS, other collaborators.
Right.
Hi, my name is Sandra Boatwright, and I'm a pre-award specialist at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And I've got a few sort of nuts and bolts questions. Have we got time for those?
Sure.
So I was looking at the RFP, and you've got your timeline that has the mandatory travel in it, the kickoff meeting for the PIs in June, but the Arctic program budget narrative template suggests that the start date would be July the 1st.
Right.
So I'm wondering, how do we get that travel, since it says you want to see funds for that in the proposal, how do we get that travel inside the start date?
Right. Yes, that's a good question. I think I would still include that, include it in your budget. What we intend to do probably is to, once we decide who's going to be funded, we will backdate the award so that they will start, the award on paper will start before that kickoff meeting, so that then any funds associated with the kickoff meeting are billable to the award. So even though agreements may not be signed until July, we can backdate them to before that kickoff meeting so that then folks can be reimbursed for traveling.
So should we use the July date, or should we just go ahead and use, like, you know, June the 1st or June the 15th?
I think it's fine if you go ahead and use June. That's fine.
Okay. So I'm also looking at the section on other support. And, you know, your funding is federal, and you're talking about enumerating leveraged federal funding. And that's difficult for us because, you know, we're really not supposed to match federal dollars to federal dollars. And the rule of thumb is kind of that you can say, well, there are these other resources that can benefit the project, but you can't say this project will benefit by $10,000 from this other project. And so I'm wondering how you would like us to handle that, because we're really not supposed to, you know, quantify those numbers, because then it becomes cost share, and then it's, you know, matching federal dollars to federal dollars.
Right, and the guidance that we've gotten from our folks who handle our accounting and our administration have said that we were very careful to call this in-kind support and not match. So
okay, yeah,
any numbers that you note there would not be considered match and not match of federal dollars, but just in-kind support. And it would just give us a sense of, you know, really what are the resources that you would be bringing to the table.
But you still need us to quantify it. Because
yes.
Our folks at the top university level are telling us we can't do that.
That's done fairly commonly in a lot of the proposals that we put through that have federal agency support. So looking at, you know, what sort of researchers are putting time in that wouldn't be compensated directly through the program, or what sort of logistical support would be available and be utilized by the program, but not at cost.
And just for the UAF folks who may be on the phone, you know, there's other areas where you can identify that, particularly the Arctic Program Logistics Summary, where you list leverage of in-kind support for logistics, and you describe what sort of in-kind support you may have for things like vessel time. You could list it there, potentially include it in the budget narrative, and we may have to have NPRB may have to have a conversation with UAF about whether or not those numbers can actually appear in the budget summary Excel spreadsheet, but I would hope that they could at least appear in the logistics summary.
Well, I think we can describe what resources might help, but we can't put a number on it, and we can't put it in the budget proper.
Yeah, I think we'll have to have a conversation offline about that. I think there've been ways that your folks have gotten around this before. So yeah, we'll have to have a follow up conversation.
Okay. So one more quick question. So in your narrative, I see the table, and it's showing it's asking for costs for FY16 and FY17, but you want us to go ahead and budget out for the full 5 years, correct?
Yes, we do. This is the sort of example to get folks started, but yes, we do want you to budget out for the full length of the program.
And do you have any sort of rule of thumb about how much other support you want to see?
No, we don't. We don't require any, but we'd like to know about it if you can bring resources to the table.
Okay. That's it for me. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Danielle, this is Francis again.
Yes?
Just reminded me of something. Is there a cash flow issue? Is there caps per year that you're going to be under, or is all this money available and it can be distributed as we need it across the years?
So just to make clear for everyone else who's on the phone who may not be used to dealing with NPRB, we do work on a reimbursable basis. So we reimburse you after the fact. You submit invoices. And the way that this program will probably be structured is that you're likely not to have one subaward that will cover the entire 5 or 6 year period. You're likely to have your money broken up over at least two chunks, in some cases potentially three, depending on which pots of money we're drawing from for your particular award. And we will expect those funds to be spent on time. In some cases, NPRB is operating on grants where the money must be spent by a certain date and then it becomes unavailable after that point. So if you haven't invoiced us and been reimbursed, by the time that money expires, you're out of luck. And so we've noted clearly in the RFP that you will be expected to spend your funds and invoice them on time.
Thanks, Danielle. That was good clarification, but was not really my question. Sometimes in the past, there has been a certain amount of money available for certain years because it's not all available at once. It comes, say, with a future grant that you have. And so there's been annual caps. So if we have a five-year project that goes, whatever it is, $2 million, say, that any one given year cannot go above $400,000, or could we spend $2 million out of $2.5 million in the first 2 years, and then there's only little bits of money further down the line that just gives people time, for example. Do you have any restrictions like that?
Francis, this money has been set aside by the board already, and so in terms of how that would be budgeted out in terms of the needs for individual projects, that's not a consideration. So it should just sort of, the budget should reflect what the needs of the program are in terms of implementing things. And if that's front heavy, that's fine.
Okay, thank you.
This is Rebecca Woodgate again, University of Washington. So I see in the introduction you talk about ONR and sharing proposals with ONR, and I know ONR has another call on the Chukchi out of the minute. I was wondering if there's any more information about how these opportunities would interact.
So the Office of Naval Research is potentially interested in funding aspects of research that is proposed in response to our call, particularly if it relates to sea ice or physical oceanography. And ONR can't disburse funds through our process. However, if they have funds available in their next fiscal year, they've asked that we share proposals that may be relevant to their program with them, and they may be able to ask those PIs to submit either the full proposal or aspects of the proposal related specifically to the physical sciences to ONR, and they could fund it directly. And then the money would come directly from ONR, but the project would still integrate with the coordinated program.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have any further questions? We'd be happy to take further questions now, and we're also available and happy to follow up on specific concerns if you have something that you think is specific to your institution or your situation. Feel free to contact Danielle or myself, and we can work through those as well. But if there are no further questions, I think we really appreciate everyone taking the time to hear a little bit more about the program and the questions that were asked. I think were really good and hopefully helpful to all folks on the line. If there's other questions that come up that we think might be really relevant to a broad suite of folks, we'll put that up on a fax sheet that's on the Arctic Program website to address some of the sort of more common questions that seem to arise. But again, feel free to contact us with anything over the next couple months, and we wish everyone the best of luck in putting teams together and the full proposals together. And we're excited about this program, so we hope people out there are as well.
And I'd just like to remind you that if you're agreeable to having your name listed as a potentially interested party on our website, we'd like you to please email me at danielle.dixon@nprb.org and include your first and last name, affiliation, email address, and area of expertise, just something basic like physical oceanography, marine mammal science, local traditional knowledge, that sort of thing. And we'll get that up on the website hopefully by the end of this week, and that we hope will help you identify folks from with other areas of expertise that you might approach about collaborating. And one thing I just wanted to add as well is that the folks that are listed in Appendix A with existing projects that will collaborate, all of them are also eligible to submit proposals or participate in proposals through the competition. Well, thanks so much, everyone. We look forward to learning about some of your ideas at the end of July.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Danielle.
Thanks again.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.